one hand, I understand why, or I understand the timing of today's award.
The Distinguished Service Award from the Newspaper Association.
Yeah, exactly. I understand the timing. It reflects the fact that I had my hospital stay, and on the other hand, I think if you ask people, the people at this convention, they would all say, "No, we think we missed you," and it was 31 years ago that I got the Associated Press Managing Editor's Award as Journalist of the Year for South Dakota. And, and so here we are 31 years later, coming full circle and getting this Distinguished Service Award. And, you know, Dave Bordewick of the Newspaper Association and Jeremy Waltner of the Freeman paper, who is the current SDNA president, you know, they each told me that this is a rare award. Dave assured me that it wasn't like the Hall of Fame, that it was, better.
You said it's a rare award. Do they do one of these each year?
No.
It's not even an annual regular award.
No, it's not.
Okay.
So, I don't know. The, it's one reason why I did what I did today, and you didn't see it, but when I got the award, I held it up like this and, put my hands over my head and, had that award in both fists and did this and then bent over and just said, "And that's all I have to say." And, it was a way to, to get off stage in time. Because they were running, they were running way behind, and that put us back on schedule. And B, that's, I've been wrestling with what I was going to say today, and finally I decided it was better to just let that speak for itself and just hold it up.
Sure.
And people in the audience roared. I mean, they liked it. So that's sort of a whole long story.
Yeah. Well, and I guess when you're recognized for saying things well for 31 years, what words do you put on top of that?
Yeah.
You're being recognized for a great body of work.
Yeah.
Things that everybody has heard. Now, you mentioned your health scare this winter, and you've written in your most recent column, you've described the conditions and what went on, and apparently the doctors have now said, you're looking good.
Yeah, they did.
As far as they can tell, you're not going to have trouble at another court hearing and end up in the hospital again.
Well, I don't know if that's true, but
come on, be hopeful here.
Yeah. I mean, what happened in a nutshell was, 3.5 years ago or so, I became increasingly short of breath and had found myself breathing hard, coming up just one flight of stairs, And then one evening, one summer evening, went down to shoot an American Legion baseball tournament, regional tournament game between two teams in the losers bracket, and couldn't get back up the hill without stopping, and it was a relatively short hill, and in Pierre, and then once I got to the top, I thought I was going to pass out, I was hallucinating, and parts of the sky were falling, literally, and I wondered if I could make it to my truck, and eventually, so I drove home, and all the way across town, even though the hospital was a few blocks away, as the evening So Ellen, my wife, called the ambulance, and eventually the doctor on ER duty that night came in and just said, you know, your lungs are filled with clots and you're 90% filled. And they flew me to the heart hospital in Sioux Falls, and you know, 6 days later, I was fixed. You know, I was fixed actually in about 3 days, and then they kept me there for another 3 days or so for observation and for recovery. And one of the things that Dr. Bacharach did was installed a filter so that clots from my legs couldn't reach my lungs again, or my heart. Works like a minnow trap.
This is a filter in your body.
Yeah, absolutely. Huh. Yeah, put a filter in. And so I did ask him, you know, what happens to the clots, and B, does this thing ever fill up?
Yeah, do you have to go in for a filter change every 6 months? What happens?
He said the clots will, you know, dissolve themselves, and you should never have to come back. You know, the filter should last the rest of your life. And it lasted 3 years. But I don't blame him for that, because clearly something else went askew. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And my legs had filled up with clots again. And so they were no longer...
Your legs, not your lungs, but your legs had filled up.
My legs had filled up.
Huh.
Because I think what was happening is that the filter was now clogged shut.
Okay.
And then they were just backing
sure,
up.
Sure, sure.
And I was up covering IM-22's hearing in Judge Barnett's court, and I didn't know it at the time, or I didn't realize it at the time until at the end, I stood up and my legs felt like they weren't right, and that I was on a floating pier. Anyway,
you're not connected with the ground the way you should be.
Yes, and so even though I wanted to ask Judge Barnett some additional questions, and James Nord from the AP was asking those questions, I thought I got to get out of this courtroom, and so I went into the hallway, and I don't remember what happened next. Mm-hmm. I then woke up to Bill Van Camp tucking a sweater or jacket under my head. I was laying on the floor of the hallway and outside the courtroom, and the image that stuck with me were these 8 black shoes in a row, and because they belonged to the policeman who happened to be in the building. You know, one of the women who work in the state's attorney's office called my wife. Someone else called the ambulance. James Nord sat and watched. He was keeping an eye on me as well. And there were a number of, the courtroom was full or nearly full. And so there was this ring of people around me.
Because it was just right after the hearing was done.
Yes,
so anybody who was there for the hearing witnessed you in the hallway.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So what transpired next is the ambulance crew of EMTs got to the courthouse, came upstairs. They eventually set me up, had me sit up. And then there was a female EMT, and she asked me whether I wanted to go home with my wife or go to the ER. And to their surprise, I said, you should take me to the ER. Mm-hmm. And okay. And so I went there, and Ellen came down, and she called our children, who, I mean, they're adults, but the ER couldn't find anything wrong. And they ran all of these tests, and they couldn't find anything wrong. And it was my neighbor, who was the ER doctor that day, Dr. Ludall. And then he came back. Then they sent me out for an MRI, and he came back after that and took my arm and just said, "Bob, we found a mass on your brain. And, you know, we want to send you to Sioux Falls." And
this mass isn't related to what happened in the courtroom or the clot thing you had earlier. This was something they discovered.
They discovered.
Because you'd come in for this other problem.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, and so it's called a meningioma, and it's benign, but at the time, I mean, Dr. Ludall he wasn't judging it.
Mm-hmm.
He was just saying, "We're getting you to Sioux Falls." And so I was driven by ambulance to Sioux Falls, and I thought, well, that's a good sign, because they're not flying. You know, the last time they flew me, and they wanted me to hold very, very still. And so this is okay. It's not an emergency.
Mm-hmm.
And then they said, "Dr. Tynan will see you when you get there. We don't know if he'll get to your room tonight or tomorrow morning." At any rate, eventually, about 12:45, Dr. Tynan came to see me, and he said he had received one picture from here, and based on that picture, he knew it was a meningioma and knew it to be benign, but he said, "I don't know what the MRI is going to show." And then the next day, what the MRI showed were it was a couple of things. One, I had an aneurysm on my brain, and two, I had a couple other coin-sized tumors in my brain, along with this giant, I mean, truly large meningioma on my left side, which had worked its way into the right side,
mm-hmm.
The right frontal lobe as well. So I said, "So how do you take care of that?" And he told me, he said, "You know, we're going to go in or let me back up. I had asked him that on the Thursday night when I was taken down there. When he came to my room, and I'd asked him, "Well, what do you do for this?" And he said, "Well, I'm going to open up your forehead," mm-hmm. "and take it out and put your forehead back together." And I thought, you know, that's kind of like fixing a piece of body in a car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can you change my filter while you're at it?
Well, I didn't ask that because I didn't know that part yet.
Sure.
Because then he followed up and he said, "But I haven't seen your MRI yet," meaning there could be more for us to consider. And the next day when he came back, he said that I had all of these other things.
Mm-hmm.
And "I think you should go consult at Mayo." And he had previously worked I don't know about previously, but he had worked at some time in the past, trained at Mayo, with the brain doctors there, and Dr. Tynan was the head brain doctor at McKinnon. So I say okay, and he gets something, or we get something arranged to go to Mayo, and. And we leave. I get discharged at supper time on Friday. And Ellen, she had driven down and had booked a motel room already, and it was past, you know, it was supper time, so it was past the cutoff. And so we decided, and it was snowing, and we decided, you know what, rather than pull back in the pier at 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night, let's just stay here and we'll travel mm-hmm. in the day. And by the time we got to the hotel, I couldn't walk.
Wow.
And I couldn't make it in.
And you'd been fine at the hospital.
Yeah.
This came on unexpectedly.
I walked out of the hospital, mm-hmm. you know, somewhat gingerly, but when I left the hospital, I was happy, and now I wasn't happy.
Mm-hmm.
To fast forward then to the next morning, I couldn't function at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so what had happened is my legs were all clotted up, but we didn't know that, and we had spent so much uh-huh. attention on the
sure.
brain that we ignored. We didn't look at the legs.
They were still thinking this whole incident was
yeah.
neurological.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And so what we spent Saturday trying to get into the, or we got in it back into the ER. Dr. Tynan wasn't on duty, and the woman he had covering for him said, you know, you weren't my patient, so I had to have you come back through the ER. And I said, that's fine. And I thought, this is going to be, you know, simple. And it turned out to not be simple at
yeah.
all.
Mm-hmm.
And they spent, I don't know, 6 or 8 hours dealing with me in the ER. And at some point, you know, I had mentioned that I'd been in the heart hospital for blood clots in my lungs 3 years earlier, and suddenly it came home,
mm-hmm.
and they went, oh, you know, we need to get you over there again to see if you're clotted. And I told them about the filter and
right,
all
right.
of that. And so they put me on morphine, if I recall, and that's pretty much the last I can remember. They took me to the heart hospital, and they scanned, you know, my body and found my legs were just, you know, filled with clots,
mm-hmm.
and what they did next was they could only work on one leg at a time,
mm-hmm.
And so what then happened is the contrast dye that they were giving me each time for the photos, or I'll call them photos,
mm-hmm.
that they were taking of my legs to measure their progress, the contrast dye eventually overpowered my kidneys and shut them off.
Wow.
Yeah. And I don't know at what point that happened. I mean, you know, because I'm out and I'm
mm-hmm.
restrained,
mm-hmm.
and the so they get my legs cleaned out, and then B, they turn their attention to the kidneys, and they can't get them restarted,
mm.
and so I spent, you know, 7 or 8 days. Sedated, I mean, where I was unconscious and induced coma, whatever you want to call it, and at the heart hospital. And then they brought me out of it, and still they my kidneys still weren't working. I mean, they weren't, they were at 0%. And so they moved me to dialysis, and then eventually they moved me back to the to McKinnon Hospital from the Heart Hospital. They transferred me back again, and they still had no function in my kidneys. And so I spent a month in the, you know, the two hospitals down in Sioux Falls. Mm-hmm. And during the course, in fact, it was at my first dialysis treatment, and I still wasn't sure what they were doing. Mm-hmm. Dave and Dee Knudsen came to visit me, and Dave was a Senate Majority Leader, mm-hmm. Ran for governor, lost in the primary to Dugard. But they came to see me, and they offered me the use of their house, and they said they were going to be gone for a month, and I was thinking it was the house I had visited, you know, once upon a time, and it wasn't. It was nicer and in a nicer neighborhood, and it was backed up against the walking path, and I didn't know what to do, and I thought, well, you know, he's not going to run again. I mean, he learned his lesson. He's not a legislator anymore. He's not really a practicing lawyer anymore.
Knudsen, as he's making this offer to you, you're thinking through this.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I didn't know what to tell them. So I just said, you know, I'll think about it. Mm-hmm. And I call it a moment of weakness, but I said to Alan, you know, you can go there, and mm-hmm. you decide if you want to go there. She did.
Your wife stayed at the Knudsen's house.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And so when, as time went on, it became for me the solution to get out of the hospital, mm-hmm. because my kidneys began to show function.
Okay.
And so I no longer was going in for dialysis, mm-hmm. but they wanted to check me, and they wanted to keep an eye on me.
Sure.
And I thought, well, I can't pay I don't want to pay to stay in this hospital, mm-hmm. If I don't need to. I'd completed my rehab. The only reason I was still there was so they could watch my kidneys. And so the offer I made was, what if I stay at a house in Sioux Falls, and I come in and you can look at me whenever you want, will that work for you? And they considered it, and then they said yes. And so that was the arrangement we had then for, you know, a week or so. Mm-hmm. The hospital released me, but under the understanding that I would stay at the, you know, at this house. And so we were there for roughly a week, and then we were allowed to go back to Pier, as my kidneys gradually, slowly improved.
And they weren't, were you on some kind of treatment to make them get better, or is this just kind of the kidneys recovering from the stress?
That's a good question, and I don't recall. I mean, I just don't know the answer to that. And I don't know that I would know it without asking Ellen.
Well, and not to look Gift Health in the mouth. We're glad they're working. You're fine there, but that's interesting.
Well, and they're like at 50 or 60 some percent right mm-hmm. now, mm-hmm. 50 some or 60 some percent. So they're not back to normal, but they're mm-hmm. at the edge of normal.
Okay.
And, so let's see, came back to pier, or went back to pier, took about a week. Legislative session had started by that point. And so I think I missed the first couple of weeks of session and then went back halftime and then for a week. And when that was okay, then I went back full-time and finished session. In the meantime, we had scheduled a visit to Mayo for surgery. Mm-hmm. That was set for mid-March.
So during session, you're still carrying these
yes.
growths around in your head.
Yes. And
clots are gone, so you can yep. get around. You're good on that.
Yep.
These growths in your head. So apparently they weren't impairing your function, but they're there. You're thinking about them each day.
You know, and here's the thing, is that, you know, it turns out that they were impairing my function.
Really?
But we didn't know it. I mean, mm-hmm. because I now find, since they removed it, mm-hmm. I now find I can think differently.
Huh.
I read more rapidly. Mm-hmm. There's a huge improvement, and the doctors this past week when I went back to Mayo Monday mm-hmm. and Tuesday, they wanted to measure my brain, and which they did, and so now, you know, and they showed me the MRIs side mm-hmm. by side mm-hmm. what they took on the 16th of March and what they took on, you know, the 20 whatever of April, and 5 weeks apart, and you know, the March MRI shows my brain just is up against the walls of my skull,
pressed against the skull.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And and as Dr. Put it. You know, his analogy was it was a subway car, and you can only fit so many people in a subway car, but you're cramming them in there more and more and mm-hmm. more until mm-hmm. Until you're just standing there with your arms crossed and hanging on to a pole or whatever, and he said so now what we have is. The cleanup crew is in that subway car, you know, and it just has the passengers that it ought to have, and what I could see on the MRI then from the April 20 something MRI is there's a black ring all the way around my brain,
and that ring is
space.
It's just it's the gap between the brain and the skull.
Yeah,
so empty space in your brain in your head is a good thing.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yeah, it really is. And I can begin to see the curves, mm-hmm. the noodles of my brain.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I couldn't on the March MRI.
When you look at the new MRIs, yeah. the scans, you can see the wrinkles, the convolutions the wrinkles. In the brain.
That's Dr. Lanzino also showed me, he didn't put it the same way, but he also showed me some of the same things. I saw Lanzino on Monday afternoon and on Tuesday morning. And the other thing that they said is that I could have my next MRI taken in Pier. I should give it some time. Mm-hmm. There wasn't any hurry. They laid out different treatment scenarios for the remaining tumors, one of which is I could just simply wait and see if they've grown at all. You know, come say August.
Sure.
And if they haven't, I can decide at that point, do I want to wait again, or do I want it, removed? Do I want it removed with a scalpel, or do I want, radiation? What they call gamma knife radiation, where they shoot gamma rays into your head from all different directions simultaneously at one spot, and kill the tumor cells at that spot. And so I would need probably three of those treatments.
Sure.
I don't know.
But for now, those two little tumors, they're still there.
They are still there.
But they aren't creating anything like the pressure, the crowding that the meningioma was creating. And the meningioma, that's all out of there now.
That is. I mean, well, it's almost all out. Dr. Lanzino did the surgery. I don't know if you can see it on the front of my forehead, but or on my forehead, but I've got some bumps. Where he put the pieces back. But he found much more material than he originally expected. And he found on the left side, and then on the right side, it was larger than he expected as well. Yeah. So, and we did see pictures, actual photographs of the material that he removed.
Wow.
And yeah.
I think I'm glad we're on audio.
Oh yeah. Well, they were nice. I mean, they were nice photos. They truly were nice photos. And and he was actually excited. I mean, he mm-hmm. came to see me after the surgery, and he came back another night. And Rochester is an amazing place. Mayo is an amazing place. And it's, I don't know if you've ever been there, but it was, my first visit. And on one hand, I want it to be, maybe my last.
Yes, let's hope so in that regard.
But on the other hand, I mean, they do mm-hmm. amazing work. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it was a good all-around experience, honestly.
Great. Yeah. So do you think this health experience, pretty serious one, does this affect you looking ahead now at your work as a journalist? Because you're not retiring. This distinguished service doesn't mean, hey, get out of here, Bob. It just means great work, and you want to keep doing the great work.
I do.
Do you see this experience shaping your approach or making you approach your writing, your reporting any differently now?
Well, in a couple of ways it has. And I don't know that these effects will be permanent.
Mm-hmm.
But I find I can't take notes in the same rapid way that I did before.
Mm-hmm. Even with after the surgery?
Yes.
Even feeling good now?
Yes.
That's still not the same?
Right.
Huh.
What it has done for me, on the positive side, what it has done for me is it makes me refer back to documents to make sure I get things right. And so I it may take me a little longer to get something done, but I think I'm getting it done more accurately. There's that. I wake up a couple times a night, and what that has done for me is it's allowed me to get up and blog, which is something you would appreciate. When I'm blogging, I'm putting up blog posts at 4 and 5 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I'm also doing is rewriting news releases or editing news releases that come from the government, and getting those on my blog as well. So there's maybe less opinion mm-hmm. and and more facts on my blog.
More even supplemental reporting.
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, commentary on stories you've already covered.
Exactly.
Interesting. So you don't feel like you're losing sleep. You're getting some quality work time in the quiet of the night.
Well, yeah, or the quiet of the morning.
Right,
but,
right.
But, you know, the birds are singing, or they're eventually singing. But, yeah, I feel that way. I get tired by the end of the day, more fatigued by the end of the day than I used to. That may just simply be recovery. And, this is a sidetrack, but, you know, my taste has changed. And my
taste, like food taste. Buzz,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah. And there are things that I find more appealing than I previously did. And there are other things that I find, I don't want to say less appealing, but I'm just more neutral about.
Since the operation.
Since the operation.
Since they opened up your skull and tinkered around in there, they moved some taste buds around.
Evidently. I don't know what they moved around, but
sure.
But they have. And I'm trying to think what else. You know, I can't drive, so I had to find a way here today. And so I rode up with a friend, Dennis Weisler, and I'll ride back tomorrow with the Rapid City Journal editor, Bart Fancook.
Okay.
You know, on his way back to Pier or back to Rapid City. So, you know, I have that limitation, but otherwise I'm in fine shape, you know, or as fine as I can be at this point. I've got this halo, you know, this scar that, you know, still has some scab on it, but...
Sure, up on the top of your head, not on the forehead. Because, I mean, as I met you in the hall, I'm like, he doesn't look like a guy who's been under the knife recently.
Well, yeah, but I was. Mm-hmm. And in the, if you look at me when I come out of the shower, you see it.
I'd rather not, but thanks for mentioning that for everybody.
No, I just,
sure,
I'm just
sure.
Saying, you know.
Yep.
You won't see anything on my legs, you know, or my body, but... But my head bears the scar.
Okay.
You know, my skull bears the scar. And,
sure.
And it basically it follows the hairline. You know, it goes up from one ear and follows and gets to the crown of my head and follows it around, follows the front around, and then comes back down to the you know, other ear. And what they did was they peeled the skin off my face and then put it back.
They've put it back.
They stapled it back.
Wow. And they've put you back, and you're going to be back reporting for the foreseeable future.
Yeah. So I, you know, I just filled out my evaluation yesterday.
Evaluation for?
Self-evaluation.
Oh, okay.
For the American, for the Aberdeen American News.
Sure.
And, I don't know. Anyway, it was earlier this week. I don't know that it was yesterday, but the, you know, and one of the questions they asked on that was, what's your career goal? And I just said, you know, I'd like to finish my career in Pier for the American News until at age 70. And I said, and I'm 58 today. And so, you know, that sort of puts us on a timeline. So,
and as you mentioned with Janklow and others, you when you set a timeline, you usually tend to stick to it.
Yeah, I think so. You know, I get to coach baseball this summer.
Great.
That made me happy. I was concerned about that interruption, you know, in Aberdeen is the newspaper is pretty good about, you know, allowing flexibility. The days of games, you know, I work until I need to be at the fields, and then I come back that night. And, you know, and work either that night or pick it up again the next day. And so I still get my, 40. And reporters, they work, well, some reporters work more than 40 hours,
mm-hmm.
and I'm one of them. Mm-hmm. It's just been a good career, and I'll leave it at that.
And there will be more of it.
I hope that so. Career. Yeah, I think so.
Well, I think a lot of your readers hope so too, and I certainly do. Bob Mercer, South Dakota Newspaper Association Distinguished Service Award winner in 2017. Back on the beaten pier, thank you so much for talking with Dakota Free Press.
Thank you. I appreciate it.